Chapter 23. At some point during his bizarre flight through subterranean darkness, Pike was overcome by a wave of lethargy so enfolding and comfortable that he could not resist sinking into a half-sleep. As he drowsed, he could just hear the annoying voice of that AI remote muttering to him in the background, occasionally breaking through with a sharp comment or a direct question.
Do realize that as an outsider, your understanding of war cage politics and history cannot help but be minimal and fragmentary at best. You probably don't know that the Zavri were originally allies of the Inheritors, which is how we termed ourselves, by the way. Aparatach is a terrible name, conferred upon us by some Shuskar sycophant. We always thought of ourselves as the Inheritors, since we inherited the Builders' legacy, their dreams and concepts, the totality of their work, in effect. We had a responsibility to shoulder, so when those ingrates and persecutors and slavers started to go from world to world, conquering and slaughtering and spreading their lies, we had to act. We had to oppose them. At that time, the Shuska were just one among a clutch of extremist factions. We did not really understand the strains of xenophobia which underpinned the creeds of those factions, only that they had come together out of a shared sense of, well, hunger for loot and slaughter is probably the most accurate summation. Their propaganda raved about a host of injustices, most of which were imagined or cooked up out of the meagerest components. Cross-world regulation of trade, for example, or food production standards, and so forth. In such feeble soil was the great weed of their outrage planted, and once their war wagon started rolling, few authentic justifications were sought. Battles raged back and forth for years, entire worlds became shattered battlefields. Our greatest weapons were the cold regiments, cognitive combat machines, some the size of your fist, others as big as a castle, and able to move under their own power. Our organic allies, like the Nakhra and the Zimzin, were almost as impressive in terms of the intricate technologies and sophisticated weaponries they were able to provide. The Zavri, with their inherent and unique biology, straddled both these disparate elements of the war effort. And it worked, and the would-be usurpers and blood-hungry marauders were steadily pushed back and back. And then, at that dig site on Kenifi, those Shuskar researchers found 5 sentient bioweapons buried in ancient metal caskets.
He became aware of a brightening of the light, a smear of weak glow leaking past his half-shut eyelids, a visual nag as yet too subtle to disrupt the swaddling doziness in which the probe's commentary was an irritating murmur.
Proved to be more than just resurrected war toys thinking of the grave. Oh no, as living sentient things, they have minds and memories, out of which they dredged blueprints detailing a weapon of surpassing specificity. Suddenly, we found frontline units of the cold regiments were starting to suffer higher than usual losses and malfunctions. Then, a reconnaissance in force on one of the few remaining enemy sympathizer worlds was routed, and the battle that we rushed into a day later, they won, convincingly. Before long, we were the ones who were falling back. Our combat machines were easy prey to the new Shuskar weapons, which were even capable of destroying the Zavri.
Pike cracked open an eye and saw grubby, dilapidated corridor walls sliding past.
Ha! More boring dream scenes, he thought. I would have expected my fizzing imagination to come up with something a bit wilder than that. "Wake me up when it all gets shouty and fighty and mad," he cried out, or at least meant to, or could have.
Only took a few years before the positions were reversed, and we were the ones being forced back to our hold worlds. By we, in this case, I mean the alliance of we inheritors and the Zavri, the Zimzin, and a dozen other civilizations who had devoted their resources and lives to the cause. But even our staunchest allies, the Zavri, were so diminished that they could scarcely field a sizable force any more. So when one of their leaders, Khaldro Vryn, came to us with a somber but strange request, we could not refuse. Back then, the Zavri knew far more about the secrets of their biology than those of today. Among their many meditation techniques, for example, was one called the encrystalling. This was capable of sending the meditator into a deep state of mental suspension and physical stasis so profound that their biometallic flesh itself transmutes into a pseudo-crystalline form, the incarnalith, as they called it. So, before our senses, this is the metamorphosis which Kalro Vryn conducted and completed then, as we agreed, his remains, his incarnalith, was dispatched to our deepest, most fortified vault for safekeeping. Of course, we could not suspect the true scale of the savage destruction that the enemy would soon visit upon our worlds.
Even though his drowsy state was warm and comfortable, still changes in his immediate surroundings continued to impinge upon his awareness. There was no longer that sense of swift, gliding motion, so he shifted an arm to peer out with bleary eyes, and it seemed that now he was descending into some huge hole, or some such.
Honestly, whoever's in charge really has to keep the interruptions to a minimum. Can't they see that the good folk are trying to get some kip?
Struck without mercy or restraint. When our military campaign was in the ascendancy, we went to great pains to avoid the mass slaughter of non-combatants and the destruction of cities. But when the Shuskar and their goons became the conquerors, they opted not to bother with such niceties. Military and civilian were subjected to the same brutal logic of total war. Entire populations were wiped out, and especially troublesome planets became the target for the Shuskar's most treasured weapons, the mantle munitions. Monstrous towers, capable of burrowing into the surface of a planet, tunneling down beneath its crust, then detonating their payloads with devastating effect. As with several other worlds, these vicious weapons were used here on Gatuzna, as I am sure you have already seen.
Pike frowned. Still, his rest was being disturbed. Small, inescapable alterations in the surroundings, a certain coolness that he could feel on his skin. And had the sense of motion ceased altogether? And was this a solid surface beneath his stretched-out form?
Many millions of brave sentients died when they broke our world, when they tore into the guts of Gatuzna in search of the machines and rematrixed stone that held our distributed intellect. We were prepared for the very worst, with concealment gambits and preservation ploys that ultimately ensured our survival. But the incarnalith of Kaldro Vryn was not so fortunate. The colossal forces unleashed by the mantle munitions penetrated the storage chamber, shattering the incarnalith into thousands of fragments. So, with the few resources left to us, amid the demolition of Gatuzna, we sent the chamber down into a risky vault of last resort, down into the planet's outer core, where Shuskar sensors could not see with any detail. We had our stealthy clandestine bolt holes, and we managed to survive the bombardment, the planet ripping, and the aftermath. In the subsequent millennia, we have watched the Shuskar rise to prominence, then utter dominance, watched as they imposed on every world a brutal hierarchy with themselves at the pinnacle, various grades of sycophantic minions below them, and the mass of planetary populations at the bottom. And seen how they used the institutions of the Grand Escalade to divert energy and aggression into the bout tournaments, the battles, the faked grudges, the pseudo-wars pitting planet against planet. Over the span of time, it has caused the grotesque de-evolution of all the system civilizations, the brutalizing of thought and social interaction, and what was once the great harbour of benevolent harmony has become the war cage, our prison, their grand arena, where the powerless perform and fight and die for their pleasure.
It began to percolate through Pike's soporific mind that comfort and warmth was no longer available, that he lay on cold flat stone, that there was a curved wall all around, its striated surface covered with small beads, about a third of which emitted a bright light. A harsh light that did not help with his blurred sight.
But during this long, bloody interlude, we have investigated the peculiarities of Zavri biology and the nature of the Incarnalith. The Zavri have, under the tutelage of the Shuskar, become the deadliest and most feared fighters anywhere in the Warcage, and have demonstrated their loyalty to the Shuskar on innumerable occasions. A truly impressive irony in the light of the secrets we have managed to unlock. And as he stared, he felt something through the suffusing warm drowsiness, a nip on his leg, just a tiny pinprick, like a cold insect bite. Perhaps you can feel the first shards of the Incarnalith now. We deliberately induced in you a form of resonating soporific feedback to narcotize your awareness, to deaden the sensitivity, at least at the start. After all, anticipation tends to heighten pain. The pinpricks were coming every second or two, and they were getting sharper. Then something struck him in the right arm, and it felt like an icy razor blade. Pike cursed and sat up, the alertness of pain shredding the drowsiness, chasing away the fug. Even as he tugged his jacket arm up to see, another brief stabbing sensation hit him in the back. Then, out of nowhere, a tiny dark object flicked in to bury itself in the flesh of his uncovered arm. Pike swore at the sudden lancing pain, then swore again in disbelief as the object, a dark blue glassy splinter about an inch long, sank smoothly into the skin, leaving behind a small, fading circular mark. He barely had time to understand what was happening before another shard struck home, and another. And another. Even in its shattered state, the fragment of the Incarnalith still possesses a vestige of Khaldro Vryn's awareness and purpose. The fragments know that you are to be their host, although sadly, your kind of bioform cannot accommodate more than a third of the shards. But we are sure that it will be enough. By now, Pike was lying back down on the cold, hard floor, curled up, arms wrapped around his head, snarling and cursing horribly as the shards kept coming. His clothing was sliced and tattered, and it felt as if a mob of sadistic seamstresses were stabbing his arms, back and legs with surgical needles over and over. Spitted and spiked, skewered and perforated, all the wounds merged into a continuous cataract of raw pain. We could have rendered you unconscious during this process, but the vestigial awareness of Khaldro Vryn might, out of instinct, have attempted to usurp your undefended mind. And, quite honestly, Captain, there are too many problems like that around at the moment. But, as you may now be discerning, the intromission is almost complete. You are now host to a portion of an Incarnalith, the crystalline matrix of an ancient Zavri ancestor. Imagine that. Now we can give you a little more of that sleepy respite while we send you back to your friends. The drowse descended once more, smothering but not quite obscuring the carpet of tiny wounds that lay across his body. As a distraction, Pike imagined the machine's voice as a neck, a strangely disembodied throat around which he was wrapping his hands, dreaming about strangling that scheming, rotten voice, throttling it. The next thing he knew, his shoulder was being shaken by a worried-looking Ansel.
"Chief! Chief! How are you feeling?"
Pike pushed himself into a seated position, breathed in and out deeply, squeezed his eyes tightly shut for a moment, then opened them widely and stared at Ansel, who was crouching next to him. Then he laughed shakily and grinned in relief at the reality of him and Kref and Mojak and Punjo, who were gathered around him.
"I'm feeling that it's time you had a shave, laddie," he winked. "Feeling great. Never better."
"But what happened to your clothes?"
Glancing down, Pike realized that he had not dreamed all that after all. His demented encounter with the sentient probe and all that gibbering about a Zavri ancestor and those mad flying crystal splinters, it was damn well true.
and it had trashed his clothing, which now was little more than a mass of holes held together by rags.
"Bugger it," he said. "I really like that jacket."
"Didn't you get it at the Faber kiosk on Blackness Station?"
said Ansel.
"I'm sure they could..."
"Where," Pike said, cutting in, "the hell are we? Right now?" He had suddenly become aware that they were no longer in the buried complex, going by the cooler, fresher air that was wafting around.
"Probably better showing than telling," said Ansel,
who helped him to his feet and guided him over to a chest-high barrier of cracked, corroded metal, where he leaned on a pipe rail and stared out at the same massive fissure as before. Only now, he was seeing it from up high, on the other side of that deep, dark trench, standing on a platform made from scavenged panels, tiles and decking. A walkway sloped down to where a bridge, a spidery-looking thing of poles and spars, spanned the gulf to another platform, just visible in the shadows on the other side.
"It was that talking mini-bot who found us, Captain," said Kref. "We was lost over there, and it showed us the way to the bridge, but it didn't say anything about you being here."
The big Henkian grinned.
"And I still got your luggage."
He patted the wrapped bundle hanging from his shoulder. "Which is a great relief," Pike said. "But we still need Kor, so that we can get our hands on a ship, and that murdering piece of slime is still back down there somewhere."
"Fortunately, the treacherous Kor is no longer crucial to your plan, Captain,"
said a familiar voice whose smug AI amiability made Pike clench his fists. He glared and took a step backwards as the Inheritor remote rose up from the shadows below the platform, its pin spot muted to a cool blue glow.
"You again," Pike said. "So, why is Kor no longer crucial? I hope you haven't killed him, because I was really saving that pleasure for myself."
"After we get him to help us rescue Dovla and Wynn."
"He's very much alive and crashing around in the corridors over on the other side, him and his compromised companion."
"Compromised? Which is supposed to mean what, exactly?"
"It's a Zavri inconstant persona thing. Anyway, the reason Kor is superfluous to your needs is because we can reunite you with your ship, the one that Gabros and Mav borrowed."
"Stole," Pike said. "Get it right. He thieved it right out from under me, the gouger."
"As you wish. But the point is that we know where it will be in a few hours' time. And if you allow us access to that portal junction generator of yours, we can input the correct location data. That is Zimzin technology, isn't it? They really were the masters of portable high-spec devices."
"That sounds generous," Pike said, half suspecting what was coming.
"Look upon it as a recompense for a very special task which we would like you to carry out for us, for Kaldro Vryn."
Pike was sombre.
"A task, you say? Heard nothing about this when you were whisking me off through the darkness."
"It comes down to a bargain, Captain, wherein you do something for us and we help you in turn. The shards of the Incarnalith were not an incidental detail, but integral to the job awaiting you."
The floating remote paused, its glowing beam surveying the puzzled faces of the crew.
"Ah, so Captain Pike has not told you about how he has been imbued with the crystal shards of a Zavri ancestor several thousand years old."
A frowning Ansel looked at Pike, but shrugged before the captain could speak.
"Well, that's not so unusual," Ansel said. "Lots of stuff the captain doesn't tell us, like this whole thing with Mojag having a copy of Oleg's mind in the cyber-prosthetic bit of his brain, and how Oleg's been in charge for a while now."
Ansel's voice trailed off, and the uncomfortable silence threatened to go on forever until Pike gave Mojag, no, Oleg, a questioning look. Oleg sniffed.
Well, we were wandering around in those corridors, getting more and more lost by the minute, and you weren't there, so I decided to tell all. Full disclosure. They took it pretty well, too.
There were nods all round. Not expecting such a matter-of-fact reaction, Pike was bemused. So, you guys aren't weirded out? See, I thought you might get the cold freaks over it.
After the years I've been flying with this gang, Ansel said, weird seems to be fairly normal to me.
Just so, said Punjo. Indeed, the last few days have been fairly bizarre, even by our standards.
Weird is our middle name,
Kref declared. Oleg gave a knowing nod, and Pike gave a rueful grin.
Well, excellent. It's a demented cosmos, and I'm proud to be part of it.
Adaptability is a survival trait, said the floating inheritor remote. It makes us feel optimistic about your chances in the forthcoming Technomachy.
Pike smiled, teeth gritted.
And, what might be my role in this upcoming pantomime? Something gaudy and flamboyant, I hope.
With the Zimzim portal device, we shall send you to Nagolga, one of the Shuskar fleet worlds. Your ship will be there along with the bold Gabrozen Mav. We urge you to put aside any lingering grudges and lend him your aid and comradeship, using, if necessary, every scrap of deceptive guile you can muster. The Chainer leader's goal is the same as your own, the Shuskar Citadel world. But getting there presents a challenge. There are force field defenses which can strike from what you call hyperspace at any unauthorized vessel which enters the war cage. The ships stored on the fleet worlds have authority beacons installed. Thus, it will be necessary to commandeer one of them so that you can traverse the war cage's interior and reach the Citadel world safely. On arrival, you must infiltrate the Shuskar defences and get up close to the main control chamber. At that point, the Incarnalith shards will leave your body in a manner harmless to you and take over all their instrumentation.
Pike was less than overjoyed at the prospect of encountering Gabrozen Mav, never mind having to cooperate with him in carrying out what was without doubt a monstrously unhinged plan, although the part about stealing a ship appealed to his sense of professionalism. But still, this machine, which had the nerve to call him devious, made his shifty sense tingle every time it spoke. Then there was the matter of Dervler and Wynne.
This had better work, he said, or I will come back from the dead and pour stale beer into your circuits.
We have every confidence in your heroic abilities, Captain.
I don't know if ironic flattery counts, he said. Now that we're clear about my part in this, I need something from you.
Something more than a ship, Captain?
Two of my crew were captured by Khor, who handed them over to this gunlord Exra Holt.
He stared at the hovering machine. I need you to find out what happened to them and where they are.
We have a somewhat limited access to Shuskar communications, and we could scan for any useful information about your people, Captain, said the remote. But keep in mind that once the Incarnalith shards assume control of their instrumentation, then all their networks will be transparent to us.
I'm sure that there's more to the big plan than that, Pike said. After your crystalline friend takes over the machines and you get your claws on them, then what?
There was an odd silence which grew, and he suddenly realized that Ansel and the rest were staring at him.
What?
Captain,
Ansel said, pointing.
Look!
Pike raised his hands and swore when he saw dark blue letters tracing the same word over and over all across the skin on the back, the palms and the fingers.
Vengeance.
That's Kaldrovrin for you, said the inheritor remote. harsh, but fair. And harsh.